Afghanistan. Also, the author of Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. Dar, it's always great to speak with you. Thanks for the great information.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's straight up 11 o'clock. Not a bad timing. I adjusted the speed a little bit. I hope it wasn't too disconcerting. Looking for some more from him, acute observer, and spent a lot of time on the ground in Iraq and elucidated things to me. Again, the podcast is Dispatches from the Underclass. That's the previous podcast we heard, and that was Flashpoints. And you can find them on SoundCloud and hear the entirety of his interview. I'm sorry, I best go and gargle or something. Not wine, though. Cheers. Thanks for listening. Opinions are those of the speakers. Dave Johnson, we'll have to wake up this disc. Oh, there it is. Union Edge, music into the afternoon. And thanks for listening, Sport Weft. Remember, there's an Airshifter training class coming up if you want to get up on the tightrope and do this yourself. Airshiftertraining@weft.org. You can email them and get some info.
We're
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, a few of the underwriting announcements. This hour program is brought to you in part by the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed, underemployed helpline, call area code 217-328-2295. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And program on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to affect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And the Graduate Employees Organization Union, the GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in a struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Radio. Okay, looks like I'm flying solo today. Our co-host Bob Plesney is up in Chicago, and Bill Gorell seems like he had to work this morning. So anyway, we're going to start off with a little music from James McMurtry, and then we'll be right back with some labor news headlines. So stay tuned. When is my
Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line, a flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot, 'cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack, just busted concrete and rusted tracks. Empty storefronts around the square, there's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you're looking to score. We can't make it here anymore. Still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd gets thinner each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just scratch yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
Oh,
high school girl with a bourgeois dream, just like the pictures in the magazine she found on the floor of the laundromat. A woman with kids can forget all that. If she comes up pregnant, what'll she do? Forget the career, forget about school. Can she live on faith, live on hope, high on Jesus or hooked on dope? When it's way too late to just say no, you can't make it here anymore. Stocking shirts in a Walmart store, just like the ones we made before. Except this one came from Singapore. I guess we can't make it here anymore. Should I hate a people for the shade of their skin, or the shape of their eyes, or the shape I'm in? Should I hate them for having our jobs today? No, I hate the men sent the jobs away. I can see them all now, they haunt my dreams, all lily white and squeaky clean. They never known want, they never known need. The shit don't stink and the kids won't bleed. The kids won't bleed in the damn little war, and we can't make it here anymore. To pay less tax, the working poor get to fall through the cracks. So let them eat jelly beans, let them eat cake, let them eat shit, whatever it takes. They can join the Air Force or join the Corps if they can't make it here anymore. That's how it is, that's what we got. If the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye, call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains, it's done closed down along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
Okay, that was James McMurtry, and we can't make it here anymore. He does a really good job with that song in the lyrics, tying in all these wars that our government is waging with our tax money and the ill effects it has here in the United States upon working people. Okay, for some, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Now, for some labor news, in Chicago, labor leaders were planning to go to court to block legislation cutting pension benefits and raising retirement age for many city workers and opening the door for a property tax hike to help pay for the city's share of employee pension costs. WBBM News Radio political editor Craig Delamore reports Anders Lindahl, a spokesman for AskMe 31, which represents thousands of city employees, said a coalition of labor groups was preparing a lawsuit to challenge the city's pension plan. He said the measure proposed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel and signed by Governor Pat Quinn on Monday would reduce the value of earned pensions by one-third within 20 years of retirement, and that's a violation of the Illinois Constitution. The problem in the retirement system is not the cost of the benefits. The problem is the city's failure over decades to pay a responsible, actuarially based share of the contributions, he said. Under the mayor's plan, city workers' annual cost of living adjustments on their pensions would fall from 3% a year, compounded to a straight benefit of half the rate of inflation, or 3%, whichever is less. Lindahl said city workers always have paid their share, but the city repeatedly skipped or delayed its required payments. Now, regrettably, rather than working together to solve that funding problem in a way that everyone can support, the mayor and General Assembly pushed through drastic cuts to the pension benefits, he said. He said delegates at the 1970 Constitutional Convention in Illinois intended to protect public employees from just this kind of action. The 1970 rewrite of the Illinois State Constitution included a provision that makes public employee pension plans contractual relationships, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired. The framers of the state constitution said they wanted to avoid a situation where politicians didn't pay their share and down the road said, well, we just can't afford it, and now a retiree is losing their life savings, Lindahl said. The mayor's pension plan would allow the city council to raise the city's property tax to pay its share of pension costs. He has proposed raising property taxes in the city by $50 million a year for 5 years starting in 2016. So anyway, yes, it seems like one way or another, you know, the capitalist class in this country is trying to rob the public sector and then make working people try to pay the balance in one form or another. This is just more of a familiar story, unfortunately, which needs to be resisted. Matthew Ho, an Iraq war veteran, started a petition to President Barack Obama in the United States Congress, which says President Obama and Congress don't take new military action in Iraq. The solution to the chaos is none other than American military intervention, including bombing strikes. Fallujah, Mosul, Baghdad, hearing these names again sends a chill down my spine. As a Marine who served in Iraq, I know well the bloody cost paid by Americans and by Iraqis in these and so many other cities over the past decade. I have friends who to this day remain on the front lines of a sectarian conflict that is tearing their homeland apart, a sectarian conflict that didn't exist prior to the U.S. invasion in 2003. And I'm saddened to see the renewed and growing violence once again gripping Iraq. The United States and Iraq have already paid dearly for George W. Bush's disastrous decision based on lies to launch the Iraq war. With Iraq once again descending to violence, we must not repeat the mistakes of the past. No military intervention, whether a massive invasion like the one in 2003 or the limited airstrikes some are calling for today, neither will solve the deep and complex challenges Iraq is facing. Iraq's problems can only be solved by Iraqis, not American bombs, and launching another military intervention in Iraq would only throw more fuel on the fire that is raging. Even worse, it would once again risk American lives in a fight that is not ours and that we cannot win. Over the past few days, the news has been filled with stories of a swift insurgent advance from Syria. Originally, these insurgents were financed and armed by the United States and Saudi Arabia. And these militants under the banner of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the ISIS, have taken over city after city in northern Iraq. These militants, fresh from the fight in neighboring Syria, have made dramatic progress capturing American-made weapons and supplies left behind by the fleeing Iraqi security forces. Their advance is fueled in no small part by the repressive sectarian policies of Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. The situation may get worse before it gets better, but one thing is clear, American bombs are not the solution. And you can find his petition at moveon.org. Okay, we're going to take another little music break here. This time, this is Steve Earle, no, Rich Man's War. Stay tuned. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Kim and John Army prison had no place to go. There ain't nobody hiring here since all the jobs in down in Mexico. Reckon they learned to self-trade, made me see the world. Somewhere
Okay, that was Steve Earle, just another rich man's war. Okay, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Okay, for some more news, as we talked earlier about the connection between these wars of U.S., actually, I should say, of corporate aggression of imperialism abroad, basically that these wars are not fought for the benefit of the American people and working people in particular. They are fought to enrich the 1%, the extremely wealthy in this country, and to control world energy supplies. These people, the ones that beat the drums for war and wave the American flag and say anyone who opposes war is unpatriotic, these very same people are the first ones to want to cut veterans' benefits when these soldiers come home. Not to mention all the death and destruction that's caused in the countries in order to enrich the 1%, and not to mention all the deaths and permanent damage done to American soldiers, both mentally and as well as physically. And in addition to this, there's also a connection to all this to corporate trade agreements like NAFTA and the new proposed free trade. They got two of them. One's called the Pacific Trans Partnership and the Atlantic Trans Partnership. And these are being vigorously pushed by Obama, many of the Republicans, and many of the Democrats in Congress. And there was a prelude to this that happened a few years ago called the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas, in which many Latin American countries rejected. However, Peru and Colombia were some of the countries that got on board with it. And 5 years ago, this last week, was the anniversary of the Bogota massacre in Peru. So 5 years ago last week, Peruvian police opened fire on indigenous people protesting the implementation of the U.S.-Peru Free Trade Agreement, the FTA, terms providing new access to exploit their Amazonian lands for oil, gas, and logging. On June 5th, 2009, Peruvian security forces attacked several thousand Awajun and Wambi indigenous tribe people who were protesting, including many women and children who were blocking the Devil's Curve, a jungle highway near Bogota, 600 miles north of Lima. The protesters were demanding revocation of decrees enacted to conform Peruvian law to the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas requirements. 32 Peruvians were killed in this infamous Bogota massacre, and hundreds were wounded, including women and children. The FTA's foreign investor privileges also allowed U.S. and other foreign multinationals to pressure Peru's government to reopen a smelter that had severely caused lead poisoning to hundreds of children in La Oria, Peru, a story revealed in a Bloomberg expose. Outrageously, now the Obama administration is pushing for inclusion of the exact same extreme and foreign investor privileges in the Trans-Pacific Partnership it has negotiated with Peru and 10 other Pacific Rim countries. Opposition to these terms, which empower foreign investors to circumvent domestic courts and laws and sue governments for cash compensation in foreign tribunals for lost potential lost profits, even not for just actual lost profits, is just one issue that is bedeviling the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations, which have missed repeated deadlines. The Bogazua, as Peruvians call the 2009 massacre, was caused in part by Peruvian President Alan Garcia. His decrees implementing the free trade agreement violated the rights of indigenous people established both under the Peruvian Constitution and treaties Peru had signed guaranteeing prior informed consent by indigenous communities on projects involving their land. And Garcia demonized the protesters as manger dogs. He likened the indigenous protesters to dogs growling over food that they neither eat nor let others eat. Thanks to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, we can now see that the U.S. government was urging Garcia on. Public Citizen received only heavily redacted diplomatic cables in response to a Freedom of Information Act request regarding the U.S. role in the 2009 Peruvian crisis over the Free Trade Agreement implementation. But WikiLeaks has published the full text of messages between the State Department and the embassy in Lima. 4 days before the killing, the State Department cable addressed the growing indigenous protests, stating, quote, should Congress and President Garcia give in to the pressure, there would be implications for the recently implemented Peru-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. Days before the massacre, the State Department argued that the Peruvian government was being too lenient by allowing the indigenous roadblocks to continue. Quote, the government's reluctance to use force to clear roads and blockades is contributing to the impression that the communities have broader support than they actually do. On the day of the Bagazua, another State Department cable did not condemn the government's role in the violence, but blamed the violence on Peru's indigenous movement. What's become known as the Amazon's Tiananmen Square brought the realities of the U.S.-Peru Free Trade Agreement into sharp relief. Rather than being a new free trade agreement model as it was sold, at the FTA's heart were the same extreme investor rights that animated the North Atlantic American Free Trade Agreement. Indeed, when Congress passed the U.S.-Peru FTA in late 2007, a majority House Democrats opposed the deal, and no labor, environmental, consumer, family, farm, or faith group supported it. While Democratic House Trade Committee leaders had forced some improvements with respect to the access of medicine and the FTA's labor and environmental chapters, the PAC included an expansion of NAFTA-style investor privileges. I want to comment, though, that there were Democrats who supported this, unlike what this article is trying to imply. Peruvian groups also expressed strong opposition, including labor, Afro-Peruvian, and indigenous groups. They not only opposed the foreign investor privilege, but also other FTA terms in areas of intellectual property services and more that threatened their biodiversity, cultural heritage, access to medicines, and traditional livelihoods. The fifth anniversary of the Bagazua is the most appropriate time to reconsider the U.S. approach to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The experience of the U.S.-Peru FTA makes clear even improved labor and environmental chapters cannot overcome the NAFTA-style investor protections at the core of the Peru FTA and now the Trans-Pacific Partnership. These free trade agreements, so-called free trade agreements, they have nothing to do with free trade. They have to do with, it's basically corporate managed trade. And what this is, this corporate managed trade, as it, you know, the article shows, is that it gives absolute rights to investors and people of wealth, basically to the point to where it can supersede a country's constitution and laws. And if the government doesn't comply, then they can be sued in these foreign and trade treaty tribunals in which they have no accountability to the people anywhere. And it's just another means of corporate control, both economic and political. And this needs to be vigorously opposed. The wars, the austerity measures in countries, including the United States, where they're trying to cut back on services like Social Security and Medicare and prevent Medicare for All from happening, as well as these free trade agreements that basically force corporate profits at the point of a gun. Because nowhere have these free trade agreements ever been embraced by the people of these countries, only by the wealthy elites. And when the people have fought back, oftentimes their governments respond with extreme violence, including killing people. So we got to keep that in mind, what these free trade agreements are all about, and not get taken in by the corporate media, propaganda. So anyway, we're going to take a little music break, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
WFT, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, it's Neil.
Hi, Neil, how you doing?
Pretty good, how you doing?
Good. Are you watching any of the World Cup?
I got to watch the Netherlands-Spain game yesterday, and oh, man, that was a slaughter.
Yeah, I heard it was an upset.
Yeah, 5-1 Netherlands, and nobody was really expecting the Netherlands to win because most of their players are either old now or injured.
Uh-huh.
And it was a complete one-sided slaughter, 5-1.
Wow, okay. Well, I tell you what, I've been seeing a lot of emails here recently about the extreme security measures taken in Brazil by the military, by the government, using even the military besides the police, as well as the costs that are being spent by the government of Brazil that is, you know, could be used elsewhere. Can you? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, there's a lot of basically security state being done. The World Cup and the Olympics have, of course, in recent years become methods of neoliberal investment priorities. It benefits multinational corporations like the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, or FIFA, the governing body of international soccer, as well as their corporate sponsors, Adidas, McDonald's, Coke, and those others. And we've seen mass evictions of communities. We've seen indigenous people resisting the loss of their land. And we've seen the cutting of the ability to really fund social services. The World Cup stadiums and the World Cup infrastructure necessary to put on the event cost Brazilian taxpayers approximately $11 billion.
You know, that's amazing because, up till a few years ago, I thought that these countries, made money off this from all these corporations that are coming in and stuff, and I heard it was just the opposite.
Yeah, it is just the opposite. Most of the stadiums have exclusion zones, so local businesses or local independent businesses are not allowed within a certain radius of the stadium. And so you can only, like, if you want a soda, you can only buy the FIFA-sponsored approved soda within the stadium or, like, within a vicinity of the stadium.
Wow. That's just...
And so it really damages local businesses and local communities.
Man, it's just unbelievable. I've heard stories that the military had occupied all the rooftops within, I think, 6 to 10 blocks of the stadium and put anti-aircraft missiles up on the roof. Now, of course, we know that there's no reason for that because Brazil, it's ludicrous to think that there'd be any kind of aerial attack of the stadium. What that's done is a lot of people are saying that it just gives an excuse for the military to be up on the roofs and then to basically use binoculars and telescopes to observe and document individual protesters, during of the many protests that I hear are going to be happening.
Well, we've seen anti-aircraft missiles being put up in London during the London Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a massive spread and increase of state policing structures in the cities that have hosted World Cup and Olympic events that... These, increased cameras or increased police presences or the militarization of the police, giving them, more militarized weaponry, it doesn't go away after the event leaves. This is one of these neoliberal priorities to help militarize the police, and those kind of things don't go away. Mm-hmm. And there have been massive protests, and most of the people are out in the streets talking about the cut to social services or the fact that social services aren't being funded at a robust level across Brazil. And they're being asked to foot the bill for $11 billion worth of profits for FIFA. FIFA is expected to make $4 billion in revenue from this World Cup.
Wow.
Approximately 66% more than they got in 2010 in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing the World Cup and the Olympics starting to go to places in the global south, in the South Africa, being part of this neoliberal development package there. And we're seeing both the World Cup and the Olympics heading to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to see them in Russia, and then in 2022, the World Cup's going to be in Qatar.
Oh.
And it's this neoliberal development package. And you're socializing costs and privatizing the profits of it.
Yes.
And it was very, very interesting for me to see the police in the end of May go on a strike. The federal police in Brazil went on strike demanding a pay raise. They got their pay raise. But now, if you need any idea of what the institutional role of the police is as an institution, You may be friends with individual officers, you may be friends with individual people, mm-hmm. but the institutional role of the police, if you need any idea of what the institutional role of the police is, that can easily be seen in the police shooting stun grenades and tear gas and beating people with batons as other workers try to get their own raises.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's always been a dilemma for the labor movement, you know, is that unfortunately, you know, the police, when they say protect and serve, the question always begs the question, protect and serve who? Because history has shown they rarely really protect and serve the people, the communities they police.
Yeah, we've seen protests, over 1,000 people were out in the streets near Rio, and Sao Paulo saw rubber bullets and tear gas and stun grenades being fired as people tried to march near the stadium, not even directly outside it, but tried to march within blocks of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And they met massive anti-riot resistance. And we can't have a riot without police.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they held a banner that said, if we have no rights, there won't be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And 11 people so far have been detained, probably more than that, but that's all that's come out in media reports.
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen the subway workers that have gone on strike asking for wage increase. And they're demanding at least 10% wage increase, and the state has only offered about 8.5%.
Mm-hmm.
The court ruled on Sunday that they would have to return to work, but they ignored it and continued the strike, facing fines of over $222,000 a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They suspended their strike, and they are going back to work now,
mm-hmm.
saying that they're going to demonstrate for the 42 people who have been fired, but they have suspended their strike.
Mm-hmm.
But they did face police repression,
mm-hmm.
and that was part of it. They said one of their reasons for going back to work is they didn't think they were ready to face more fights with the police.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you...
Of course, it's interesting that the police can go on strike for their own pay increase, but anybody else does it, they're going to be smashed with batons.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you saw any of the some of the email stories floating around this week about all the money that the city of New York has had to pay out to people in settlements because of people's you know, constitutional rights being violated during the Occupy protests in 2011.
Yeah, I did see that, and I always laugh. One of our mutual friends, Dave, had this great graphic of help fight capitalism and win fabulous cash prizes.
Yes, I remember that. It was sent out, yes. Oppose the ruling class and win thousands of dollars in prizes, yes. Yeah, of course, we know the corporate media always suppresses that information, you know, about, you know, the cities or whoever basically violating people's rights and then having to, you know, pay out money that's really, you know, the taxpayers' money that could be used for other things, you know. And it's just, I tell you what, you know, that's the thing is, like we just talked about earlier here, neoliberalism is basically, you know, it's always forced on people at the end of, you know, at the end of a gun, ultimately. It's not free trade. It's basically corporate managed trade in the sense that it gives, it's not trade to benefit working people. It's basically set up to favor wealthy people and corporations. You know, and this recent World Cup thing that you just talked to us about is more documentation of that.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that with the laws being put in place where there are new laws. They were put in place in Vancouver. They were put in place in London during the Olympics. They were obviously put in place here during the World Cup. It essentially makes protest a crime.
Mm-hmm.
That if it's very vaguely worded, so it allows them to say, well, you're violating this statute. We can arrest you.
Mm-hmm.
They've been put in to try to stop some of the strikes that were taking place. They passed a law that says you can't go under 80% of the people being absent from work. So you can only have 20% of the people be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so airport workers are on strike. We've seen bus drivers go on wildcat strikes. It's a very interesting thing that the labor leadership is often agreeing to certain amounts of raises,
mm-hmm.
but the rank and file don't think they're high enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen bus drivers drive out into the middle of Rio, take the key out of the bus and walk out and just walk away and leave the bus full of people.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's too bad it has to inconvenience, you know, normal commuters and stuff, but, you know, it's like they didn't cause the problem. You know, they're usually always pushed up against the wall before, you know, it comes to something like that. Well, it looks like we're just going to have to start going back to the days when, like in this country and other countries of the world, to where, you know, working people through their unions are just going to have to start defying the laws, because that's how ultimately we got the rights that we did. I mean, you know, back, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, late part of the 19th century, there were even laws basically making being a member of a union illegal. So, you know, when you have unjust laws and unjust system, that leaves the people, you know, few choices, if any, but to defy the law, you know, for the, you know, the morality of the rights of people to have a decent standard of living. And constitutional rights, for that matter, to be able to protest and speak their mind. Neil, thank you so much for calling in and giving us that update.
Oh, sure thing.
What's going to be on your show today? You're going to be—I assume you're going to be talking about the World Cup.
Oh, we're going to be talking about World Cup. We're also going to be talking about the Ed O'Bannon trial against the NCAA.
Okay.
Ed O'Bannon, a former UCLA basketball player, is suing for antitrust violations against the NCAA, arguing that he and other players should have a right to be compensated for the use of their name and likeness in commercials, video games, being on television, and other things.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting. And where can people tune in to listen to your show, and what time?
104.5 FM, WRFU, LP Urbana, at 2 o'clock, or you can just check it out on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Neil. And, tune in at 2 o'clock for Neil's show.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you. Take care.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And does a shadow of the men who send their guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and their lives in the balance. There are people under fire, there are children at the cannons, and there is blood on the wire. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fanned the flames of the wars that are fought in places we can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion the same time they sell us our wars. I want to know who the men are, shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. It can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance. There are people under fire, there are children at the cannons, there is blood on the wire.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. That was Jackson Brown with Lives in the Balance. Okay, we got a couple public service announcements here. I guess this is from the AFL-CIO Champaign County. The 2014 Labor Day celebration will be August 30th through September 1st, and we are holding our celebration in Urbana again this year at Prairie Park on East Washington Street. And parade entrance, that you can sign up if you want to participate, actually, in the parade. And they're going to be also having raffle tickets for sale. You can find out more information by contacting Dave Beck at area code 217-721-5344. That's 217-721-5344. And also, this Sunday and every Sunday, tune in for the Labor's World View television program on Comcast Channel 6 at Urbana Public Television from 4 to 5 p.m. And this summer, starting already, there's going to be a real interesting lineup of oldies but goodies, a lot of good films and discussion about a lot of labor history, including the United Auto Workers sit-down strikes during the 1930s, the Great Uprising of 1876, Great Railroad Strike, it's also called, and the San Francisco General Strike in 1934, and a lot of good other labor history films and discussions. So tune into Labor's World View this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6. And if you don't get Comcast, you can access it live online at www.urbanapublictelevision.org. And, you know, as we've been talking here, you know, there's definitely a pattern here, and that basically is that working people have lost a lot of their standard of living here in the United States, as well as other countries around the world over the years. And also, they've lost a lot of their control over their governments. And Robert Reich, who used to be the U.S. Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton, wrote an article just recently that was published in actually a central Illinois newspaper out of Bloomington, Illinois, called the Grand Prairie Union News. And the article is basically called The Choice, Capitalism or an Economy that Works for All. And just to read some highlights of this, for years, Americans have assumed that our hard-charging capitalism is better than the soft-hearted version found in Canada and Europe. American capitalism might be a bit crueler, but it generates faster growth and living standards overall. Canada and Europe's so-called welfare state socialism is doomed, according to the corporate media, that is. And it was a questionable assumption to begin with, relying on a large extent on our collective amnesia about the first three decades after World War II, when tax rates in the United States on top incomes never fell below 70%. A large portion of our economy was invested in education than before or since, and over a third of our private sector workers were unionized. Now it's down less than 10%. We came up with Medicare for the elderly and Medicaid for the poor, and built the biggest infrastructure project in history, known as the Interstate Highway System. But then came America's big U-turn during the late 1970s, when corporate interests started to get the upper hand again, when began deregulation and deunionization, lowering taxes on the wealthy, ending social programs, and less basically cut off funding to education and infrastructure. Meanwhile, Canada and Europe continued on as before. Anyway, what's interesting is the fact is that compared to Canada and Europe, the United States has fallen behind. While median per capita income in the United States has stagnated since 2000, it's up significantly in Canada and Northern Europe. Their typical workers' income is now higher than ours, and their disposable income after tax is higher still. And it's difficult to make exact comparisons of income, but even if we assume Canadians and the citizens of several European nations have simply drawn even with the American working class, then they're doing better in many other ways. Most of them get free health care and subsidized child care. And if they lose their jobs, they get far more generous unemployment benefits than we do. In fact, right now, 75% of jobless Americans lack any unemployment benefits. If you think we make up for it by working less and getting paid more on an hourly basis, think again. There are at least 3 weeks, and I know for a fact in Germany, where my wife's from, it's 6 weeks paid vacation is the norm, along with paid sick leave and paid paternal leave, in which both the mother and the father of a newborn baby get up to 6 months each of 100% pay to stay home with their child the first year of its life. And that's definitely family-friendly policies. We're working in the United States an average of 4.6% more hours than the typical Canadian worker, 21% more than the typical French worker, and 28% more than your typical German worker. According to data compiled by New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, but at least Americans are more satisfied, aren't we? Well, not really. According to opinion surveys and interviews, Canadians and Northern Europeans are. They live longer, their rate of infant mortality is lower, and women in these countries are far more likely to die as a result of complications in pregnancies or childbirth. In other words, we have a lot higher infant mortality rate. But at least we're the land of more equal opportunity, right? Wrong. Their poor kids have a much better chance, and that's relatively poor. of getting ahead, while 42% of American kids born into poor families remain poor throughout their adult lives. And yes, the American economy continues to grow faster than the economies of Canada and Europe, but faster growth hasn't translated into higher living standards for American workers. Almost all our economic gains have been going to the top 1% into corporate profits in the stock market, more than a third of whose value is owned by the richest 1%, and into executive pay. European CEOs' take-home pay is far less than their American counterparts. America's rich also pay much lower taxes than do the rich in Canada and Europe. But surely Europe can't go on like this. You hear it all the time in the corporate media. They can no longer afford their welfare state. Well, that depends on what's meant by welfare state. If high-quality education is included, we'll do well to emulate them. Americans between the ages of 16 and 24 rank near the bottom among rich developed countries in literacy and math. And that spells trouble for the U.S. economy in the future. They're also doing more workforce training in Europe and Canada, doing it better, doing it than we are, and the result is more skilled workers. Universal health care for all is another part of their so-called welfare state that saves them money because healthier workers are more productive, and a Medicare for all system eliminates the private corporate health insurance sector, which is why the United States has the highest health care costs in the world, but we rank only 37th in quality of care and access, which puts us just slightly above Uzbekistan. So let's put ideology aside. The practical choice isn't between capitalism and welfare state socialism, as it's called by the corporate media. It's been a system that's working for a few at the top, or one that's working for just about everyone. Which would you prefer? So anyway, that's from Robert Reich, and it was published in the Grand Prairie Union News, which is a newspaper published monthly. It comes out of Bloomington, Illinois. In fact, the editor of that, Mike Matika, has been on the World Labor Hour a couple times. And anyway, we're going to, at this point, play you some more music, and then we'll be right back. So stay tuned. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on WFT, listener supported community radio station in Champaign, Illinois.
That has no clue. Inside fighting between the red and the blue. Political corruption, sex scandals out of control. The people are tired of care. Waging captive votes, the people want to change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. Country going through recession, jobs are on the line. Kids can't afford college, the bills are so far behind. She's got a headlock on us, gas is on the rise. Can't afford to use my dollar. It's like the people want to change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the stand. Hands together! Sucker casket to be rented. Bury me like a mummy when I die. The people want to change. Tired of the same old thing. They can't wait for the cold to open. Down with the status quo. Immigration, hate crimes, and discrimination. Global warming, genocide, default, and very alarming. Illegal occupation of a nation by failed administration. Economic crisis, crooked lending devices. Tax cuts for the rich, drinks out of it's democratic. I'd rather fight this with people wanna change. Tired of the single day. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. They can't wait for the polls to open. Down with the status quo. The people wanna change. The people wanna change.
Okay, that was John Lee Hooker Jr., People Want to Change. And boy, I'll tell you what, that really hits the nail on the head. Because you know what? It's really interesting how the corporate media tries to divide us. I mean, first of all, they misinform us. Then they try to distract us from the real issues. Then they try to divide us along issues of identity politics and stuff. But you got to understand that regardless of your opinions might differ than some of your fellow working people out there. Some of you may consider yourself Democrats, some Republicans, some independents. You got to realize that there are certain core issues that transcend all of that artificial superficial corporate media propaganda, like healthcare. I mean, we all need Medicare for all. You know, this whole thing with Obamacare was nothing but about diversion and distraction that did little or no good for the majority of the people's healthcare needs in this country, and instead just merely expanded and further entrenched the corporate health insurance industry in this country. Now, of course, you can get into, you know, I've gotten into a lot of debates and arguments with a lot of my liberal Democratic friends, but I'm telling you, you look at it, you look at the results, and there's still way too many people without health insurance or people with inadequate health insurance in this country. I mean, we're talking in the tens of millions, and it's just unacceptable for the fact that we have such a system when we have, we're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. So healthcare, Medicare for all, that's something we can